Broadcasting on the web and locally on 90.1 Hope FM. This is your Election 50.
These are your updates at midnight. I'm Jeff Buckridge and this is the latest news. Breaking news firstly, Newcastle-upon-Tyne Central and Newcastle-upon-Tyne East have all been held by Labour. The first three election results were also holds for Labour. The first two seats were Sunderland West and Sunderland Central. In the third seat, Labour held Washington and Sunderland West with a majority of over 13,000. Labour predictably holds the seat, but UKIP came second with 7,321, just ahead of the Conservatives. The exit poll from YouGov couldn't be closer. A Conservative-Liberal-Democrat coalition would add up to 315 seats, whilst a coalition of the left, led by Labour with the SNP, Plaid Cymru and the Greens, would also result in 315 seats, according to the poll. That would still be short of the seats needed for Downing Street. Labour Shadow Chancellor Ed Ball spoke out about the exit polls results, saying the Tory party shouldn't read too much into it.
Even if this exit poll, which is a real outlier, is right, that means the Conservative and Liberal Democrat majority for the coalition has gone from 73 down to zero. David Cameron would be clinging on, trying to make a majority work.
Meanwhile, UKIP is forecast to win only two seats, according to exit polls. But the party's executive chairman, Suzanne Evans, has said she thinks they will exceed expectations.
I think it's wise that everybody I've heard so far commenting on the exit poll is advising caution, because just that two seats certainly doesn't accord with my experience on the ground. I was in Thanet South yesterday with Nigel Farage and he was literally being mobbed by voters.
Bookies have been devastated by the exit polls. William Hill told ITV the odds of a Labour government increased from 7-4 to 10-1. Meanwhile, odds of a Conservative Lib Dem coalition drifted in from 3-1 down to 6-4 on. Police are investigating possible electoral fraud at Glasgow East polling station. The polling station is Scotland's largest general election count. The probe comes after alleged cases of personation where people pretend to be someone else to cast their vote. Labour's shadow Scottish Secretary Margaret Curran is fighting to retain her seat in the constituency. The Bournemouth Echo has reported that the turnout for both Bournemouth constituencies are set to increase from 60% in 2010 to 80%. Both Bournemouth East and West declarations are due for 3 a.m. All ballot boxes from North Somerset are now in. All 65 boxes are now safely back at NLC's Scotch Leisure Centre, ready for the count. The first is expected at 10:20 a.m, with the last expected an hour later at 11:20 p.m. Andy Kirkwood of South Dorset, who is standing as an independent after launching his own party, called Movement for Active Democracy. He has said that he was delighted with how the campaign had gone. You are up to date with all the latest news. Join us again at 12:30.
This is your Election 50. Get in touch using the hashtag YE50.
Okay, thanks for that, Jeff. I'm now joined by Betty in the studio.
Hi, Hannah. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. So in the last hour, we have received the first result of the general election, with Labour holding Halton and Sunderland South and Washington and Sunderland West, Newcastle-upon-Tyne East and Tyne North and Tyne Central. But the hottest talk on the political landscape in the last hour has to be the results of the exit polls. If we deem the exit poll to be accurate, as it was in 2010, then we face the outcome of Cameron remaining as Prime Minister and as the head of the minority government without the need for a coalition. But many speculate that he will have to rely on the support of the DUP or the Lib Dems. The poll also suggests that Labour is set to receive a devastating hit in the hands of the SNP, with Labour's vote dropping an average of 18%.
So you have mentioned how the exit poll has predicted the Conservatives and Labour's electoral outcome, but how are the other parties reacting to the results?
Well, UKIP is forecast to win 2 seats, but Suzanne Evans, the deputy chairman, is remaining very positive and reckons that they will be more successful than that. The poll predicted that the SNP will win 58 seats, but leader Nicola Sturgeon showed her humble side, explaining that she believes that to be unlikely. The Lib Dems, however, look like they will have the most gloomy night, with the party's vote falling 16%.
And should we really trust the results of the exit poll?
In some ways, yes, for it is the most accurate of all the polls before the final result is announced, purely for the fact it tells us how people have voted rather than how they will vote. Then again, the results prove to be so different from the most pre-election polls that many are questioning its accuracy, with YouGov stating that they found no reason to change its final prediction before polling day.
Thank you, Betty. We'll speak to you again at 1 a.m, so it's in an hour.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay, now as always, you can contact us on Twitter and using the hashtag YA15 and start your message with the word radio. Okay, so now we're just past midnight and we're to be expecting the first batch of results to pour through in a couple of hours' time. But for now, I've been left in the studio all on my own as my co-presenter Dom is roaming around the university to see what is happening around the university behind the scenes. So Dom, can you hear me?
Hello.
Yes, here you are. Okay, so can you tell me what's happening downstairs in the TV coverage?
I can indeed. I've gone to the other side. I've joined the TV force, taken a wander down here behind the scenes. In front of me is a very, very busy set. They look a lot more manic down here than we are upstairs. People running around left, right and centre, stage lights, cameras everywhere. It's all very, very exciting. And I've actually met a good friend here, Mr. De Graft.
Hello.
He is the anchor of the TV coverage this evening. How's it all been going?
Well, it's been interesting. It's actually been quite exciting. We've been hearing, obviously, counts have started. It's a bit manic, but it's a good manic. It's a manic we can all cope with, and it's just all exciting and thrilling.
Are you going to be on air all night, all the way right through to tomorrow morning?
Well, we're alternating every 2 hours. So right now, I'm off air for 2 hours, so I can breathe, eat, and maybe have a cheeky nap. And then in 2 hours' time, back on again.
You lucky thing. Well, we wish you all the best of luck for the rest of the evening. Take care, and we'll speak to you later.
Thank you.
Also joining me this evening, I found a certain Subu representative, VP Welfare, Mr. Rhys Pope.
Hello.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Tired, but probably not as tired as you.
Not as tired as we're going to be. You're dressed very smartly this evening. Suit and booted. What's the occasion?
We've got the BU board tomorrow, so we've had all the board members for the university down. We've been having dinner and showing this amazing event.
So, yeah. And have you been enjoying the coverage so far?
I have. I'm not going to lie. I wanted to go to bed at the end of the dinner. Then I came along, realised how well things were going, how professional everyone is, and thought, you know what? Let's stay for a few more hours.
Well, fair enough. So how long do you reckon you're going to sit out for? You know, it's just gone 12 o'clock. What time are you expected to stay here till?
I'm reckoning about 1, possibly half 1, and then definitely bed.
Definitely bed. I'm so envious. I'll be getting to bed at about 10 o'clock tomorrow.
Unlucky you. You've got a show afterwards, so you're going to be busy.
I certainly am. Well, thanks ever so much for joining us. How do you feel about the university? You know, you must be proud as someone who works for SUBI right now to see the whole of the media school to collaborate for something like this. What does it feel like? Proud?
Yeah, I'm really proud. I don't really know what goes behind the scenes on all of this, and it's really great to see it all, being able to walk around, and it's just a real it's real honour to see it all, and well done to all the media school. You're doing amazing.
Thanks ever so much, Rhys. Well, that's a good question you posed there. What is going on behind the scenes? Just taking a walk in the direction of the TV crew. Might have to be a little bit quieter now. It looks like they're actually live on air. Cameras are swinging left, right and centre. A couple of presenters in front of me. A couple of panel of politicians as well. It's very exciting down here. And rumour has it there's actually food on this ground floor. We haven't seen any reach the first floor yet, but I'm going to go and have a wander around now, see if I can find some pizza, because I can smell it in the air. And Hannah, I do promise that I will bring you a slice.
You better, Dom. You better. I'm holding you to that.
Okay. Right, I'm on my way back to the studio. See you in a minute.
Thanks, Dom. Okay, now we've already established that engagement with the 18 to 24 age group in this year's election has been a massive talking point amongst politicians and the media. But what do the heavyweights themselves have to say about inspiring a next generation of voters? Our reporter Alex Volkar tracked down Lord Grade and Bournemouth West Conservative candidate Connor Burns when they visited our very own Talbot campus to put forward some important questions.
Join us today at Talbot campus, where Lord Grade, BBC chairman, and Connor Burns MP will be taking a tour of the facilities. Hopefully we'll catch up for an interview.
What are we doing now, Alex?
I'm trying to find a Lord. Excuse me, have you seen a Lord anywhere?
Yeah, it's one over there.
Excuse me, have you seen a Lord anywhere?
A Lord?
A Lord, yes.
Which Lord is it?
Lord Grade, I believe.
Lord Grade?
Yes.
Okay. But... have you seen a Lord Grade anywhere?
Excuse me, I know you're promoting Lollipop, but have you seen a Lord anywhere? Seen a Lord?
A Lord.
A Lord, yeah. Sir, have you seen any Lords today?
Any what, sir?
Any Lords?
Lords? No, I haven't. No, sorry about that.
With the TV debates in full swing, a coalition looking likely, and the election just around the corner, it was the perfect time to pose some serious political questions and ask what role the media will play in the run-up to elections.
Very pleased to have you both here, Lord Grade and Connor Burns. Thank you very much. As a former chairman of the BBC, do you think there's more the BBC should be doing to engage young people in politics?
I don't think it's the broadcaster's job to do anything other than report and reflect what's going on in politics. It's for the politicians themselves to inspire the younger generation. I don't think there's a lack of interest in politics, and kids, students want to get into politics, become part of politics. The problem is the more sort of general malaise of the youngsters who get the vote don't use their vote, and I think that's the key test. But it's not the broadcaster's job, it's the politician's job to inspire people to understand how important the vote is.
But I mean the stats, they don't lie. 40% of 18 to 24s in 2001 voted, 38% in 2005. I mean, the last time 18 to 24s had a higher voting percentage than any of the adult categories was when my mum was born. This is a ridiculous trend. How's it going to be mended?
Well, as I say, I think it's up to... people want to be inspired. People want a race. I think it'd be safe to say we've definitely got a race in the coming election. We're not going through a political period at the moment where one party is dominant and the election is a foregone conclusion. You know, you get three or four terms of Tory, three or four terms of Labour. It's very different now. Hopefully that will generate interest. And I think the fact that there is growing support for the non-traditional parties, new parties coming through, obviously the Greens, UKIP, if you like, that sort of thing, is fine. It's quite interesting, and I think that stimulates people's interest, that there's more to politics than simply Labour and Conservative.
And Connor, I just wanted to come to you. What do you think of Cameron's opening gambit last night on the television debates?
I shared Michael's view on these things. I didn't particularly want them to happen. I think the problem the Prime Minister had last night was the expectation level on him was so high, and the expectation level on Ed Miliband was so low, that all Ed Miliband actually had to do was walk onto the stage without falling over and deliver a couple of complete sentences, which he just about managed to do, and it was judged something of a success. I think this election, with the cynicism you've just referred to, it's more important than ever that the politicians are out connecting with people on an individual basis. And can I just talk about your question about young people?
Yeah.
Young people are leaving university now with enormous debts. That they graduate into an economy that's growing and creating well-paid jobs is vitally important. How they get onto the housing market is really important too. These are intensely political things, and it's the job of myself and others who are standing for Parliament in this election to reach out and engage with young people and help them to understand how important those things are, and that the differences and the choice at this election is greater than it's been in a generation.
That's perfect. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
Photo ops complete. One thing was clear. Politicians and lords alike know this is going to be one of the toughest campaigns for the two main parties in the history of British politics. Alex Folkard, reporting from Talbot campus.
Well, I've made it back to the studio after my excursions downstairs on the ground floor. Hannah, bad news.
What? Oh, Dom, no.
No pizza.
No.
I'm so sorry. I'm hoping that
you've
one of these lovely people can go and find us some, but unfortunately, in the time that I had, couldn't find any, but all seems to be going well downstairs. Downstairs in the TV studios. Charlie, you're back, our social media expert, back in the studio once more to give us our hourly dose of online reaction from all the social media platforms.
Indeed.
Dose me up, Charlie.
Okay, so
most weirdly enough, Russell Brand, you know how he's been, you know, getting involved with the election so far. He's just retweeted a thing that says, "Ignore Murdoch's and Mail's agenda of fear, vote for what you believe in and sign up here." And it's a levisonnow.org sort of, you know, like a change.org sort of thing like that. And he wants to implement Leveson's recommendations and stop press freedom and stuff. You know what Russell Brand's like. So that's being retweeted everywhere. Another thing is a meme of Miliband. You know how everyone loves
him. I love memes.
Yeah. Well, we've heard the Beach Body Ready poster. Have you seen the protests that have been going?
Yeah.
So basically it's a girl in a bikini being beach body ready, and there's been a lot of protests about that. They've actually photoshopped Ed's head on it. Surprise.
of course, another thing they've done.
He's ready.
Yeah, exactly. So that's another thing they've done with him. Excellent. And another thing that's resurfaced tonight is the hashtag why I'm voting UKIP. So obviously I think that was started as actual reasons for why people were voting UKIP, but then it's turned into parody and there's been all sorts of things. One of the things was as a reason to get out of Eurovision. I don't know.
And is social media use just restricted to Twitter and Facebook, or are people increasingly turning to Instagram, Vine, Snapchat, etc.?
Yeah, definitely. I think all of them are being used. Especially Conservatives have, I think they've got an Instagram account and they've got more followers than everyone else. The Conservatives have actually done really well on social media. They've put a lot of money into it and they've been trying to like get a lot of likes on Facebook and things like that, but I guess we won't know until the end. We don't know if it's actually worked.
Well, thanks so much, Charlie. You're going to be back again in another hour.
Oh, yeah.
So enjoy Twitter in the meantime.
Will do.
And keep us up to date, and we'll see you back in an hour. Thanks very much for joining us.
Bye.
Thanks, Charlie. Okay, so some breaking news now. Unconfirmed reports from a senior Lib Dem source, Danny Alexander. Lib Dem candidate loses seat in Inverness, name Badenoch and Strathspey. We'll bring you more as it comes in.
We're joined now by three more expert guests. We just keep the lineup coming. It's Darren, Lisa, and we're recycling Dan again. He's back. Thanks again for joining us, guys.
Great to be back.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, so guys, what did you make of the responses there from Lord Grave and Connor Burns?
Well, I'll kick off. Lord Grade was arguing that it's up to politicians to engage with voters and to overcome political cynicism, etc. And my understanding was that he was saying it's not the broadcaster's job to do that. So I would first of all take issue with that. Because if you think about it, if you're a politician, you're trying to... If it's incumbent upon politicians to try and engage the public, how do you do that? How do you... You can't meet everybody. You go through... the media, usually through the news media or whatever media you need to do. And that they make it often very difficult for the politicians to appear like ordinary people or get their policies across or not appear like, Machiavellian, power crazy, power hungry, selfish people. So I disagree that it is fundamentally only about politicians trying to engage voters. I think broadcasters, news media have an absolute responsibility to do that same as well.
Politicians locally have been trying to engage with the youth vote. Conor Burns himself, in fact, he was taught how to do his first selfie by a journalism student here at Bournemouth University. I can exclusively reveal Clovis Avaith and de Graaf Mensa, our anchors tonight, taught him how to do that. And so if you think about somebody like Tobias Elwood or Conor Burns, our Bournemouth MPs, they are trying to engage the local youth vote. They're doing that by getting onto social media and trying to do everything from selfies, but to actually physically show what an MP does on a day-to-day basis, which many cynical people say, well, what actually do you do? I have to say, most of the time when I see a social media stream from politicians, it's like seeing a whole line of dads dancing. So I think there are some careers...
Line dancing. Even worse.
Exactly. So I think, you know, there's a future career for all you guys to actually help and guide some of these politicians. It's not some a sphere where they feel natural, shall we say, you know?
Social media, it's I think one of the problems with politicians, what they try to do with social media is they think just by being on it, they're cool. And then they can just broadcast out messages, and it doesn't really work like that. They very, very rarely respond to questions. Some do quite well, but a lot of them it's just, you know, here I am, this is what I'm doing. But if someone asks a question, they don't see it, they don't respond to it. Now, I know there's a time issue, I know there's a whole range of issues around, you know, the problems of responding to these things, but that just turns people off. If you ask a question and they don't get back to you, why do you go and listen to them again?
They also, the politicians, always fall into the same trap of, giving something over as, you know, this new phrase of the retail offer in politics is nauseating in the extreme. And then actually, when you're thinking about communication, when they're actually physically doing that in terms of just basic advertising on social media, it's a massive turn-off. Certainly, there haven't been any that I've seen great stars of social media amongst politicians. But what is interesting is that those people who are interested in politics, perhaps younger people, are very much getting in there and showing how it's done. So the whole Miliphant thing, hashtag, showed that how you can get, even on something just rather silly, but you could actually get coalesce people actually discussing just Miliband and really just how the mainstream media are portraying him and why perhaps younger people are willing to give him a break that mainstream media hasn't.
Certainly. Well, here's a fun fact for you. Conor Burns himself, I got him in on our show for Nerve Radio at the start of the year. Got him to play Down It Fresher, which included downing a smoothie which contained cat food, beetroot, celery, and I think it was coconut water. So if that's not interaction with students and young voters, I don't know what is.
And it shows you that they will absolutely do anything.
Do anything for a vote, those politicians, won't they? Thanks ever so much for joining us again, guys. Unfortunately, we're very strict on time, but I'm, you know, considering this is now your third appearance, Dan, I'm sure we'll be seeing some more of you guys later on in the show. But thanks again for your words of wisdom. It'll be great to get more from you later on. Thanks again.
See you later.
See you later. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Now, the word on the tip of everyone's tongues during this election campaign begins with E, and funnily enough, it ends in E. Hannah, can you guess what it is?
Well, I was thinking eager, but that doesn't really work.
No, it doesn't. You're not quite there with your spelling, are you, dear? Well, Hannah, you wouldn't be wrong. It's actually Europe. It's the most controversial topic.
Okay, so, well, UKIP have made their thoughts on Europe pretty clear, and the Conservatives have pledged to hold a referendum on our membership to the EU if re-elected. But what are the implications surrounding our membership?
We now go live to Roman, who is joining us from London this evening. Good evening, Roman.
Good evening.
Hello, Roman. Okay, so can you tell us how likely is it that we'll end up with a government that wants to take us out of Europe?
Well, it's interesting that the exit polls that we've seen tonight are slightly different from what people were expecting. So it seems that David Cameron's and the Conservatives are sort of in a much stronger position than expected. So that would seem to advocate the view that we are going to have a Tory-led coalition that may take us into a referendum. There's obviously widespread concern in Europe about a referendum, about Britain's position in Europe. So that seems to be the sort of reasonable scenario that seems to be more likely tonight, but obviously there's a long way to go. We will see what happens in the next few days. I mean, it's quite clear the Conservatives probably won't have an outright majority, and then anything could happen, really.
And what are the implications for the UK if we were to leave Europe? Would this be to our detriment, or would we have some advantages?
I mean, it would be huge. It would be huge. It would be a historic moment for everybody involved. It would radically change Britain. It would radically change Europe. A lot of people in business, in academia, in government are very concerned about that prospect because of all these decades of integration, of Britain's integration in the European Union. And, you know, sort of disentangling Britain isn't just sort of the logistics involved, but it would literally mean, might mean isolation when really the challenges facing Britain and Europe right now require more integration.
Okay, and Roman, so you're live from Westminster right now. What's the atmosphere like down there at the moment?
Well, I'm actually in the constituency of Bermondsey in Old Southwark, where there's a very bitter battle between Simon Hughes, the Liberal Democrat deputy leader, who has held this seat for like 30 years, and then Labour contender Neil Coyle, who seems to be doing better than expected. So if Simon Hughes manages to hold on to that seat, it will be some comfort for the Lib Dems. But generally, it's been, obviously the Conservatives can't win this seat. But it's been very, very, it's been a very brisk battle. There's been sort of people knocking on doors and putting stuff through the mailbox literally every day. So it's been a very passionate battle.
And do you know what time you're expecting to hear the results from that particular seat?
I think that particular seat will probably come in at about 4 a.m.
Okay, all right. Well, stay tuned, Roman. We'll try and get back to you later. But thanks so, so much for that. It's great speaking to you.
Good luck with the rest of the show.
Thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, Roman. Unfortunately, there was one candidate missing from our live broadcast in March with Bournemouth's constituency candidates. That was Green Party runner Mark Chivers.
We caught up with Mark, the Mid Dorset and North Pool candidate, separately to hear his view on the growth of the Greens and the important issues shaping this year's election.
The simple situation is we have enough candidates and enough support and enough funds to stand candidates in all the constituencies across Dorset. So our membership has rocketed this year, well, the end of last year and into this year. So we're now in the fortunate position where we can stand candidates everywhere. I think there's definitely people are looking for something that's different. And again, if you do listen to the three main parties, it's all very much just slightly different versions of the same message. And ultimately, they're all bought into the same sort of political view that you have to pay the deficit down, you have to cut public sector spending. And we believe that that's a political reason, not an economic reason. And so I think lots of people recognise that in the Green Party and see we stand for something very different. Also stand for something positive, not the politics of fear or politics of hate, but something much more positive. Although Mid Dorset and North Pool is a relatively prosperous area, I think lots of people have been affected by the cuts. And you see that in terms of the number of people who are homeless in the area, which is quite staggering for, say, for a relatively prosperous area. And also, I think people do understand that, you know, the sort of loss of public services affects us all. The fact that we've paid, or the less well-off in society have paid for the recovery the most, and are looking for security as well. So, you know, a fully protected NHS, education that you don't meet. You don't have to carry a loan around with you for life. So I think there's lots of different issues, but I think those are probably the ones lots of people are talking about. It is an election where that we're standing for the first time, so we don't know what level of support we'll get. And interestingly, at the last election, the biggest number of votes were actually those people who didn't turn up to vote, which is actually quite interesting and quite sad as well, really, that more people didn't turn up to vote than voted for the leading candidate. So if they all came out and they all voted Green, statistically, we could win.
Well, there it was. That was the voice of Mark Chivers, the Green Party candidate. And do you know what? He's actually here now with us live in the studio. Good evening.
Good evening. Or good morning, is
good,
it?
Good morning.
Whatever it is, yeah, it is. I've lost track of time already.
Suppose it is actually, isn't it? I haven't registered that.
That's a scary thought.
It's Friday now. Mark, it's fantastic to have you here because you're going to give us a really unique insight into what it's like for you right now as a running candidate. You're awaiting the results. Talk to me about how you're feeling right now.
It's an odd time. So effectively what's happening at the moment is the ballot papers for many of the constituencies around here have got both the constituency results and the borough council results in the same box. So the first thing they do is to literally open them and separate them into two piles. So people are all hovering over them to try and see if they can get an early indication of what's going on in all the different wards. And it is virtually impossible, especially for a smaller party. If you're one of the major parties, you might see your name coming up more frequently. But for a smaller party, you don't see that. So you're sort of sat there waiting to see. So it's actually, for me, having done that a few times now, it's probably best just to keep out of the way. You go in, check that nobody's doing anything dodgy they shouldn't be doing. But other than that, it's really just a sort of time for waiting. So over the next hour or so, you'll probably start to get a flavour as they start to get into the proper counting, and then you'll get a view. But you really don't know until, you know, it starts to get close to the actual result, exactly where it's going.
And what are your expectations for the evening for the Green Party? You must be feeling hopeful?
The thing, I said, as I probably said in the earlier interview, is this is the first time we've ever stood in this area. In fact, it's the first time we've had candidates standing across the whole of Dorset. So effectively, it's a good news story for us, whatever the outcome. Obviously, the bigger impact we have, the better for the future. But this is for us really is about building a foundation that we take on from here. I think what actually I'd be really interested to watch is what happens in the Bournemouth constituencies, particularly the one that covers the university, because I think in those constituencies where we have a Tory majority and they're likely to get in again, is we'll actually see that people who are voting other ways will just vote for what they believe in, whereas in the constituency I'm in, there will still be a lot of people who vote tactically, and that's the bit that we're not clear on how that will impact us.
Fantastic, Mark. Unfortunately, we're really strapped for time. But if you could stick around, it'd be great to catch up with you later on. I wish you the best of luck for the rest of the evening.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks ever so much, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
The time is just approaching 12:30.
This is your Election 50. Get in touch using the hashtag YE50.
It's 12:30. I'm Jeff Buckeridge, and this is the latest news. And we start with breaking news, and it is an unconfirmed report that Liberal Democrat Daniel Alexander will lose his seat in Inverness, Nairn, Badenoch and Strathspey. As I say, that is unconfirmed report. Meanwhile, YouGov President Peter Kellner believes that if the exit polls published by the BBC, ITV and Sky are true, and the Conservatives take 316 seats, the Tories would be able to govern alone. The exit poll predicts the Conservatives will emerge from this election with the largest party with 316 seats. Sky's election analyst, Michael Thrasher, helped produce the exit poll. He says the big story is bad news for Labour.
And the crucial part of the story is that in England and Wales, Labour is not really making inroads against the Conservative vote share. And that means that Labour is destined not to win a great number of Conservative marginal constituencies.
The SNP is forecast to make huge gains in Scotland, taking 58 of the 59 seats. Home Secretary Theresa May says that's bad news for Labour.
Labour are going to see virtually all of their seats in Scotland go, so it would be disastrous for Labour. They would clearly have lost the election. But as I say, this is only an exit poll. We have to wait for all the votes to be counted to see what the results are that come in.
David Blunkett says he fears the exit polls might be right. The former Labour Home Secretary said one reason was a tsunami of votes against Labour in Scotland. However, he warned David Cameron should not be triumphant about the results. Nigel Dodds, the DUP leader, has arrived at the King's Hall count in Belfast looking pleased. This could be due to the knowledge that his party could wield some influence on the formation of the next government, given the national exit poll. Hopeful Conservative candidate and Mayor of London Boris Johnson has arrived at the county in Uxbridge. He has expressed that if the exit poll is right, then it's a very clear victory for the Conservatives and a very bad night for Labour. However, his Liberal Democrat opponent for Uxbridge and South Ruislip, Michael Francis Cox, has spoken out. He's described Johnson as somebody with no interest in the area, no moral compass, and a personal ambition to be Prime Minister. In the 2010 general election, Conservatives came out on top with 48.3% of the votes in the area, while Lib Dems placed third with 20%. Green leader Natalie Bennett has reinstated her anti-Tory pledge and says her party will do everything they possibly can to prevent the formation of a Conservative-led government. The exit poll has suggested that the Greens will have two seats in Parliament. Flyers urging people to turn away from the booth have been handed out to Muslim voters in East London. The flyers, called voting a shirk, a sin of worshipping an idol, were given to voters in the constituency of Poplar and Limehouse. The constituency accounts it has the largest Muslim population, accounting for a third of the population. You are now up to date for now. Join us again at 1.
Thanks ever so much for that, Jeff. We'll see you again at 1. It's 33 minutes past 12. This is your Election 15, live on 90.1 Hope FM. You're listening to Dom and Hannah live from Bournemouth University, where we'll be bringing you all of the latest election results throughout the night.
We're back with Alex now, who joined us in the studio to give his hourly update. How are things starting to shape up?
Hi, guys. Not a huge amount of new results to bring you, but if we packed up now and called it a night, Labour would have it in the bag. Conservatives are still polling as the largest party in the exit polls, but the first three seats have turned red. Heaton and Sunderland South, as mentioned before, is the safest seat declared at 11, confirmed Labour. Labour have also held on to Sunderland Central, and Sunderland West has turned scarlet with more than 13,000 votes in favour of Sharon Hodgson. The Tories not favouring well in Sunderland, but this will not come as a surprise to analysts. We've heard some whispers about Newcastle too, but they're saying they're not ready to confirm. As results trickle down from north to south, we will be connecting the dots in the studio with you live. We're expecting the first Dorset results not until the early hours of the morning, so hang with us. More from me in an hour when hopefully the floodgates for the results will open across the country.
So just to repeat that, Alex, we're expecting the majority of votes to come in about...
I'd say we see the first Dorset votes probably about 3:30, 4:00.
So, I know that seems like a while away, but do you know what? It feels like 5 minutes ago you were last here talking to us. I can't believe it's been an hour.
It's been an hour already. Wow.
It's madness, isn't it?
Only 10 more to go.
Time is absolutely flying. So 3:30, 4:00 will be round a lot sooner than you think. Thanks ever so much, Alex. Best of luck for the rest of the evening.
Cheers, guys. You too.
Okay, so we're now joined in the studio with Dan and Morgan, who can give us a bit more information on what this election means for our membership with Europe.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you both feeling?
Hello, how are you?
Good.
I'm rather well, thank you.
Good. Still feeling
very smart, guys. Yeah. I'm liking the attire.
No, thank you.
Thanks very much.
I feel particularly underdressed now. I'm wearing a Vans t-shirt and jeans, and you're rocking some tweed there, Daniel. I shouldn't have told you,
listeners.
But you guys don't have to be on TV. We do, so.
Well, you see, far more important than us. Right, so Morgan,
yes.
Do you think the Tory government, if re-elected,
yep.
will stand by its word on holding an EU referendum in 2017?
I would say that was all relative on the size of the government they produce. If they produce a minority and they have to go on reliance with the Liberal Democrats, then no, because the Liberal Democrats are so opposed to it. If they get a majority, yes, because then Cameron and his government will probably get booted out in 2020 and then a lot of people will probably go off to UKIP. So in order for the party to survive, I guess they would have to, yeah.
And Dan, would leaving Europe be detrimental to our interests, or would it prove to have its advantages?
I think I can't think of any advantages at the moment, because UK is dependent on Europe, on its markets, on European markets, and vice versa. And also, UK wouldn't be able to decide on regulations that come out of the EU. They would just have to accept it. If you're not a member of the EU and you want to participate in the European market, you have to accept the rules and regulations the European Union sets. And if you're not a member, you're not involved in the process of defining those rules and regulations. So I struggle to think about a positive effect. Of course, immigration, yeah. But at the moment, the strongest immigration or the most immigrants come from outside of the EU, which is something that the UK can already regulate by itself. So that's not really an EU issue. It has been made into an EU issue, the immigration, but the figures speak a different language.
A question that's open to the floor. What is the most pressing concern if UKIP do see any influence in Westminster? So if we
pressing concern, well, I don't know. I think it could be actually a very positive thing for this country if UKIP actually do have a say, because they won the European elections in this country. It's the first time that the Labour Conservative Party haven't won an outright election in a very, very long time, probably since the First World War. So I don't think there would be. I think it would be absolutely great if UKIP got into some form of coalition, especially with the Conservative Party. It might shift them back towards the right, which people like me would very much like to see. But I mean, I think UKIP could, you know, they could get the European question done a lot quicker so then the debate's actually settled. And I think UKIP's biggest thing will be changing the electoral system. I think they will really pressure it in, because the chances are tonight they could end up with about 4 or 5 million votes, but only 2 seats. And then they look over the border over Hadrian's Wall, the SNP will only get about 1.5 million and end up with 50. I think there's going to be a real talk about changing our electoral system, because it has to change. It really does. And I think UKIP can do that. I think they really can, yeah.
And Daniel, for you?
I think UKIP will push or pull the Tory as right as two Green Party MPs would pull the Labour to the left. So I don't see the influence of two UKIP MPs on 316 as it stands at the moment, Tory MPs. I get the argument about that the Conservatives would want UKIP support if you come to a European referendum, because so they just can get out of the way. People will vote no. Tories will campaign on the no vote, which will rob the UKIP of their strongest argument. So I don't think two UKIP candidates will have a big influence on Tory policies.
Well, it could do. It's all relative, of course. But it'd be nice to see if they have a certain amount of votes. And I'd like to hope that people will look up and go, well, hang on a minute, our electoral system does need to change. And yes, there could only be two UKIP MPs.
I agree on the electoral system, but that's something the Lib Dems agree on. That's something the Greens agree on. That's something the UP agrees on.
I'd like to hope that if everyone agrees, except
the two big parties.
Well, if we have smaller parties in Parliament, then hopefully someone like the electoral system will change and it'll be up for debate, yeah.
We made a pivotal mistake there of sitting these two fellas next to each other. I feel like I should be in the middle
to split them up,
hold up someone's arm as a winner.
Daniel and I get on rather well, I guess. He's a rational man.
Well, thanks ever so much for joining us, guys. Fantastic to get your insight and your debate. That's what we're looking for on the show, to show two sides of the scales, two opinions. Enjoy the rest of the evening, and we'll be back in touch with you later, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, politics in the UK has a long and complex history. However, David McQueen, a lecturer in advertising and media here at Bournemouth University, recently held a lecture in the Union Bar, no less, entitled An Idiot's Guide to the Elections, in which, aside from assessing the main parties vying the seats in the Commons tonight, he included a potted guide to British politics, and here it is.
It's a guide to what the parties stand for simpletons. So I'm not going to pretend it's impartial or even fair. But hopefully I can explain where the parties have come from and why this election is so weird. It may begin to explain why the too old or three-party system seems to be in big trouble. To do that, we need some history. So politics used to be so simple, even idiots understood it. Parliament, including the House of Lords, had real lords in it. The kinds that went hunting on their massive estates and drank gallons of port all day long. Parliament was important because that's where taxes were raised for when the king went to war, which is most of the time. Eventually, Parliament became so powerful that in the English Revolution of 1649, one faction of Parliament, led by Thomas Cromwell, cut off the king's head and proclaimed a republic. But after about 10 years of being a republic, Parliament decided we needed a king again. That was mainly because everyone wanted their say in government. The army, the levellers, the diggers, even dirt poor people wanted a vote. So Parliament thought decision making should be left to wealthy gentlemen. They worried about ordinary people wanting a vote. At least with a real king, everyone knew their place. So we had the Restoration. We invited King Charles II, who looked a bit like his father, back, and we pretended we had never been a republic, or cut off his father's head. And two factions in Parliament began to form, one called the Tories, and the other called the Whigs. The Tories were the ones who were really sorry that they'd cut off Charles I's head. But they also represented country gentlemen and keeping the status quo. Now, Tory is an Irish term of abuse. It means papist outlaw, because some were suspiciously Catholic. Whigs was a Scottish term of abuse, meaning horse thief. They got rid of another Catholic king, James II, and installed a constitutional monarchy. A constitutional monarchy is where the kings drink port all day long and just rubber stamp whatever Parliament decides. The Whigs were known for their radical ideas, like ending slavery, or stopping children working in mines 14 hours a day. The Whigs rebranded in the 19th century as Liberals. In 1900, the Labour Party was formed by the unions. They wanted someone to represent the working classes, who were mostly ignored by other parties. No one really stood up for the working class because they didn't have the vote. But eventually the working class got the vote because Parliament was taxing them to pay for expensive wars, like the Boer War and the First World War. The Labour Party was a very small party at first, but it grew, and to everyone's surprise, including Labour, it won the election after the Second World War. By this time, the Liberals were a small party because people couldn't forgive them for something, for force-feeding suffragettes, and people concentrated on the new, exciting Labour Party, who were much more radical. For example, they introduced free healthcare, when Conservatives like Winston Churchill thought we couldn't afford it. We were broke after the Second World War, but we managed free healthcare and free education, And from the 1960s, Labour and the Conservatives even paid students to go to university. After the war, Labour decided to continue things that have been normal in the war. Things like very high income tax for the wealthiest and controlling what they called the means of production. No one says that anymore, but what it means is the mines, steel, electricity, gas, telecommunications, railways, pretty much half the economy was controlled by the state, as it was in the Second World War. But not shops, not restaurants or factories making things like toys or bicycles or steak and kidney puddings. They left that to evil capitalists. And they taxed the profits to pay for the free stuff like health and education. Now this was pretty popular and mostly worked, and it carried on until the 1970s, even under the Conservatives. But in the 1970s, things got ugly for a variety of reasons. There were lots of strikes. Oil prices went sky high. The Vietnam War bankrupted America, and it basically all got really shabby compared to the swinging 60s, when everyone had a job and money. And in 1979, a new Conservative leader called Mrs. Thatcher was elected Prime Minister. And she was very cross about the unions and the state of the country. She was like a stern nanny telling the children to tidy up their messy rooms. And lots of people thought she was great. Mrs. Thatcher wanted to privatise everything. British Airways, British Steel, British Gas, British Telecom, British Leyland, Rolls-Royce, British Petroleum, British Aerospace, Water, Electricity, and about 50 other companies. And John Major continued and privatised British Rail. And the unions went from being strong and on strike all the time to being really weak and never on strike. So less people joined the union. And even the Labour Party started to move away from the unions. And they got their money from the unions. By the 1990s, the Labour Party was really tired of losing elections. So they elected a young, handsome leader, Tony Blair, and called themselves New Labour. So New Labour liked a lot of things Mrs. Thatcher had done, and did a bit more privatising, a few things the Tories had missed. They also introduced tuition fees, £1,000 initially, and then, despite promising not to, they introduced top-up fees of £3,000. So they weren't left-wing or socialist anymore, and eventually it got hard to tell the difference between Conservatives and Labour. And then Labour had three wars, one in Yugoslavia, one in Afghanistan, and one in Iraq. And the last two went very badly. So many of Labour supporters were angry because of these wars, and because Labour wasn't socialist anymore. It didn't nationalise anything, not even the railways, when even a majority of the population said, please nationalise the railways, they're terrible. Labour was friendly to bankers and rich people and reduced their taxes. It let private companies build bridges and hospitals and then rent them back to the government at extortionate rates. The NHS got loads of brand new hospitals, but it would cost the NHS tons of money, so it started to get into serious debt. So with Labour and the Tories now so similar, people got confused. They thought maybe it's time to give another party a chance. A party that wouldn't go to war or break their promises and do things like raise tuition fees. So they voted for the Liberal Democrats. They were back. Now, if you remember, they used to be Whigs, and they had not formed a government since the First World War. They signed a promise, a written pledge, they made a big deal about it, not to increase by one penny tuition fees. And they even talked about, on the hustings, free education for everyone, which was far more left-wing than Labour. So lots of people voted for them. Well, your students, you know how that went.
Coming to you live from Bournemouth University and from across Dorset, in partnership with 90.1 Hope FM, this is your Election 15.
That was advertising and media lecturer David McQueen with his condensed guide to the history of politics in Britain. And we'll have the second part of that lecture coming up in the next hour of the show.
But now in the studio, we have a panel yet again. Joining us, we have Shelley, Abby and Isabella. Good evening. Well, good morning, I should say. Very early hours of the morning. How are you three? All okay?
Yeah, hanging in there. Thank you very much for having us back.
Good. Not a problem.
So, as someone who is used to dealing with the electorate, do you think that more should be done to help the public understand what British politics is about?
open to the floor. Shelley, if you want to kick us off?
Sure. I think that's one of the things that young people have said in terms of why they struggle sometimes to engage, because I think young people get a bad rap as being politically apathetic, which isn't necessarily the case. It's more to the point that they feel like there's a real barrier to entry, which is the education around politics and feeling like they can understand the jargon and they can know who the players are.
I think as well it's a lot to do with, as myself, from my own perspective, I knew nothing about politics until I was given the opportunity to learn about it. And I wasn't given that opportunity until I got to A-level. I feel like the opportunity needs to be given a lot earlier in education.
What do you think, Abby?
I don't even think it's A-level. Like, I was never even introduced to the idea. For me, it came from my family background, and if it wasn't for my dad, I would have never got into politics. And I think even with elections now, it still takes it within yourself to go and find out what the party's about. I still don't think there's enough education.
I think with the increase of social media as well, people are starting to get more of an understanding of politics, but I sometimes don't think they're learning about politics in the right way. They're sort of getting a... I mean, it's great that they are, you know, kind of getting involved, but it's not the core kind of the values of the party. It's sort of the laughing at the leaders, that sort of thing.
So do you feel that the responsibility for this engagement, you know, should it come from the politicians themselves? So should your local candidate in your constituency, so where you're from, should your candidates reach out to you personally? Should it be the education system that introduces this change, or, you know, the utilization of the internet, social media, things like that? Where do you see the majority of these influences coming from in the future?
I think really everybody has a responsibility to be involved in this, because we're talking about democracy, and democracy is hard. We need to work at it, and we all need to be involved in it. Politicians need to speak to people on their level and to talk about the issues that are important to them. They need to be a little bit less managed, maybe, in some ways, so that they can be a little bit more accessible. We need to talk about it in schools. We need to talk about it everywhere, and everybody needs to have an opportunity to talk and to listen.
Anybody else is welcome.
Well, I definitely agree that it should be a group effort, and we were only talking the other day, weren't we, about how it should be there within schools, because you're learning things with religion, which might not be your own personal religion, but we don't know the core principles of the parties, which I think is more important than some of the things we do learn at school.
I think a wide combination is a really great idea. I mean, different aspects, you can learn different things about politics. And I think as well, with going back to young people are sort of more issue-based. They're not so much about parties. And a lot of emphasis is put on the best party winning. And I think with young people, it needs to be more about the environment, for me, it's about the NHS, you know, it's things like that that draw my attention rather than just the party.
Lifestyle politics.
I think it's right, but as sort of a, you know, a kid at school, you're not going to be, you know, you're taught religion, and that's sort of ingrained in our culture, that you're taught that you learn and realize that it's a choice, but it's still part of the education system that you have to go through. And people want to see, a lot of young voters have said that they want to see an increase in more sort of minority politicians, so more minority audiences. And surely if politics was taught in school, sort of at a younger level, then a kid aged 7 could grow up saying, do you know what, I want to be a politician. A kid who lives in a council house, definitely, who goes to a community comprehensive rather than Eton College, grows up 7 years old and says, one day I want to be a politician. And there we would start to see a change in the political sphere.
It would break that divide of the typical white middle-aged male being the go-to politician. You would get all sorts of diversity within Parliament, which is, I think, something that the UK really needs to work on.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for joining us this evening. It's been great to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll hear more from some of you later on in the show. Until then, enjoy the rest of the evening. What are you ladies up to next?
I think we're going to keep on moving on. We're going to keep looking at the numbers and see what's happening, because we're starting to see some results coming in little by little. So I think it's going to start to get hot and heavy soon.
Let's hope so. Well, thanks ever so much. Enjoy the rest of the evening, and we will see you very shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Breaking news is that the fourth seat in Swindon North is held by Conservative Justin Tomlinson. That is, the fourth seat in Swindon North is held by Conservative Justin Tomlinson. That's news just in.
Now it's that time again, and Matt is joining us again live in the studio for our next TV update.
Hello.
The couch potato is back.
Oh, that joke's not going to get old, is it?
His job, if you're just joining us and you haven't been introduced to Matt yet, his job this evening is to sit there and watch all the elections coverage on TV and then tell the rest of us who are too busy to watch the coverage ourselves what's been going on. So Matt, how is everything shaping up across the TV coverage?
It's good. I'm glad to see that you've not lost that bitter spirit that's been getting you through the early stages of this broadcast.
I never will.
I've had BBC on in the last hour, and I've got some sort of mixed reports from it. I think what I've found is it's been sort of overly cynical. Dimbleby, he interviewed a Sun journalist. I don't know his name, I'll be honest. And there was talk about Murdoch and about the Sun when they published voted for the SNP in Scotland and Tories, wasn't it? Yeah, Tories. Mm-hmm. Tories in England. And then they were saying, you know, did Murdoch write that for you? And it's just like, well, you know, that's a totally irrelevant point. We're talking about the election. We're not talking about that. So that was a bit off. It was kind of overly snobbish, I felt. Andrew Neil was very similarly cynical. He didn't take no for an answer in his interviews. He just seemed to go and go and go. And it just seemed like, well, some of us want to, you know, it's kind of entertainment as well. You don't have to just as verbally assault candidates or whatever. But it's not all bad. There was some talk about the effect on the businesses and the stock markets earlier on, which was good because it kind of gave a different dimension that we hadn't seen on previous channels. Jeremy Vine did a feature on the battlegrounds where he went onto the big animated screens and said, you know, this is a key battleground. It's held by Labour. Conservatives are fighting for it. And then they had where they'd already predicted to be fallen based on the poll, you know, where if Lib Dem were going to lose it to Labour, they had that summed up. So that was good. There was a focus on all the parties all around the country, which was similarly good. And perhaps the best bit was Nick Robinson's voice, because he's just come back from surgery on his throat, yeah, and it's still as brilliant as ever. And just before I came in, Theresa May was being interviewed, who's perhaps candidate to take over from David Cameron if and when he does go, be it, you know, after the second term. And she was being very evasive. She wasn't taking any questions. So that's a kind of, that's another good thing about the BBC, is they've not been, you know, solely based this election. You know, they've looked in the future. They've looked at the effects, you know, maybe in 5 years' time, maybe longer. I enjoyed that. I thought that was a good feature as well.
So in terms of, so you've watched Sky so far, you've switched over to BBC. Listeners out there who are willing and wanting to tune in to mm-hmm. television, you know, I won't hold a grudge too much. Where would you advise them to go between the two so far?
Well, I think it's difficult to say, because when I was watching Sky, it was very much, it was 11 o'clock, polls had shut, it was all exciting, you know, first votes were coming in from Sunderland. BBC, they've not had as much to talk about. You know, there's not been as much going on in the last hour, so perhaps it hasn't been as entertaining for that purpose. Both coverages, as you'd expect, quite impartial, but I'd probably go with Sky because it just doesn't seem to have that sort of constant cynical edge. There's a mix between cynicism, but it's good-natured, because I think when Ed Balls was being interviewed, you know, it was the interviewee was saying, you know, what happens if you lose your seat? And then there was just sort of some laughter about it. And it just didn't seem like it was wholly aggressive and wholly over the top and just wholly oppositional to whoever they were interviewing.
Okay, and so what's up next for you this evening? What are you going to be viewing?
Well, I think I should probably finish off the big three. I should probably go to ITV next.
Okay.
And then at that point, I do think I probably need a break from the heavy, heavy viewing. So I might head over after that to perhaps the Channel 4, which is being hosted by Paxman and David Mitchell, which is more of a, as I said earlier, satirical look at things. Or I might head downstairs and see how our very own team, our very own Your Election team, are doing down there.
Well, thanks ever so much, Matt. It's been great to speak to you again.
Thank you very much.
Go and get yourself comfy. Grab yourself a cup of chow.
Do you want anything?
Food. We're quite hungry, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Send help, guys. Send help.
Send some food.
If you could send us some food in our direction, that would be really, really helpful.
I'll do my best.
Okay, well, don't forget, guys, you can get in contact with the show on Twitter. using the hashtag YE15. If you send those tweets at your election 15, start them with the word radio so that we know they're coming to us and not downstairs to the TV coverage, not upstairs to the online team. Coming directly here to us. We're going to be reading some of them out on the show. Reese Pope's already been in contact on Twitter saying he's really enjoying the elections coverage. He loved our feature that we were doing about our top 20 political songs. We've got more of those coming up on the way for you, Reese, so make sure you stay tuned. Don't forget also, you can get involved. You can help us choose those political songs. All you need to do is tweet us. Again, find us on Facebook, Your Election 15, whack it in on the search bar at the top, leave us a message on our wall. Again, start that message with the word radio, and we'd be great to fill out with some more political songs later on in the show. I'm going to be getting my roaming mic out very shortly again soon. Around 3:30, I'm going to be taking a walk upstairs to the online team. I know my producer's looking at his watch, but believe me, 3:30 will come round a lot sooner than you expect.
Wait, so you're leaving me again? you're leaving me here alone?
I hate to do it to you, Hannah, but I'm going to take a wander. It's good to stretch my legs and pay credit and tribute to all the other people who are working hard out there for Your Election 15. The online team, the TV crew, they all look a lot more manic than we are. We seem to be quite cool, calm and collective up here. So the time is just approaching 1:00, which means it is time for your latest news update with Tim Smith.